So I'm going to start today out by asking a couple of questions. So the first question I have is, assuming they are supported by the hypervisor, can all operating systems be virtualized? Yes. Again, indicating that they're supported by the hypervisor, we would assume that, yes, they can, right? So there are different instances we've talked about before where the operating system is not supported by the hypervisor. And in those instances, it may or may not work depending on your situation, depending on what you're trying to do. Again, VMware tends to be a little more forgiving in what they allow and disallow in terms of operating systems in their hypervisor environments. Microsoft is very specific. Again, being very specific in what they allow for operating system versions allows them to tailor their support model towards that. So again, all recent versions of Linux are supported by both platforms. All recent versions of Windows are supported by both platforms. Older version of Windows have kind of fallen off the Microsoft support model. Again, Microsoft wants those versions of Windows to go away. Windows XP, Windows NT4, things like that. They kind of want to sweep those under the rug and make them disappear. VMware is like, hey, if you can run it, we'll support it, right? So older versions tend to be supported by IBM, where Microsoft only supports what they support in their normal life cycle. So question number two is, are there reasons not to virtualize? So again, virtualization has an upfront cost associated with it, right? We said virtualization is expensive. So if you're running an environment where you have very few servers, and again, the first kind of paper that I had you guys write was, what was the minimum number of servers to virtualize efficiently? And again, most of the numbers came back to be 5. Some people said it doesn't matter how many you have, if you're running one server, virtualize it. Some people said 20. 20, I think, maybe is a little on the high side, but again, it depends on what you're trying to do. So again, in terms of cost, virtualization initially will cost you more. Again, we talk about things like the nth server. When you say the nth device, you're talking about adding one more to your platform. And certainly when you're talking physical devices, adding another device means that you have to go out and buy hardware. Adding another server into your virtual environment is basically right-clicking new virtual machine, assigning an operating system, and then installing it, right? Or right-clicking on your already existing environment, choosing clone, you have it up and running in about 45 seconds, right? So again, virtualization is good. Virtualization overcomes some of those costs. But again, there are reasons other than costs that you might not want to virtualize. Anything anybody can think of?
If your IT can't support it, like they don't know how to deal with it.
They don't know how to deal with it, so education, support model that way. Again, if your IT department can't support it, they better learn it. If they can't learn it, you need to hire new IT people. Right? IT should not be the crux of the organization. Just because they don't know something doesn't mean that you should move in that direction. And again, hopefully you've all seen that virtualization at first kind of seems confusing, seems hard, but as you work through each of the pieces, it's really easy, right? I would say that. I hope everybody in this room would say that. That we haven't done anything here where we've gone, oh my God, that's the worst thing that I've ever done. You should not virtualize anything. No, it's not that. It's the same things that you're doing in a physical environment. You're building things one piece at a time and bringing it all together. So, again, you said cost. An offshoot of cost is software licensing. So, again, it still is related to cost, but not directly related to cost. So if you have software programs like Adobe, Adobe is licensed per user. If you license it and you install it in a server in your virtual environment, you're paying for that license. So if you're running a virtual desktop environment or VDI environment and you create a gold image and that gold image includes software like Adobe, you have to pay for each instance of that virtual machine. That can get really expensive. Again, is everybody using it? If everybody's using it, you might as well pay for it. All said and done. If only one person who works in your VDI environment is actually using Adobe, you're still paying for everybody who makes the clone of that virtual machine. So that can become very expensive. Any other reasons that you might not virtualize your environment or virtualize something in your environment?
I don't necessarily agree with it.
Yeah, some of the older databases, again, the true way to take care of something that's old is to replace it with something new and migrate. Some people don't do that. The police department, same way. They have criminal databases that they started back in 2000, and they run them on an NT4 machine.
They have databases on a zip drive.
Yeah. So, I have zip disks at my house. I have no way of accessing the data that's on them. I'm sure it's important, but I have no way to get it off. again, people are resistant to change. You mentioned the IT department, but this is actually business people resistant to change. What about devices that you can't virtualize? Right? So maybe there's proprietary software, proprietary hardware that's involved. So again, it's an introductory class, so we haven't talked about some of it, but some servers require decoding modules be installed, decryption algorithms that run on hardware chipsets. You can't really virtualize that sort of hardware, right? TPMs, things like that.
If you're running that on that TPM on the client,
so if you were running a software version, but a lot of them are actually hardware chips that you install in it. If you're taking the forensics class here, NCASE, the specialized software that runs forensic software, requires a USB dongle be plugged into the machine that's hosting NCASE, right? So you can't really virtualize that server unless you're mapping a physical device one-to-one to that hardware. It's possible. We're going to talk about that as this chapter progresses. But it may be an instance where you want to keep that as a physical server in your Blade Center, separate from your virtual environment.
Is that like a physical key that they need?
Yeah, so the USB acts as a key with the software licensing. And again, NCASE is just an example of software that we use here. There's other software that does it as well. We used a single sign-on server in my previous environment. The single sign-on server does the authentication. It runs outside of the environment. So it communicates with the other servers in the environment. Again, we had the option when we purchased it, if we wanted to purchase the physical device that did it or the virtual machine that did it. So the company actually made both platform modules. But now that we have accepted the physical hardware module, we can't add it to our virtual environment because it's proprietary hardware that doesn't run that. Even though it runs supported operating systems, even though it looks like it should just flow over nicely, it doesn't. And it won't. So again, there are some servers in your environment that you're going to want to keep as physical servers, and that's okay. Again, the point is to try to consolidate, try to minimize the total number of physical servers that are in your environment only to those that are necessary. Again, talk to your vendor. It's actually cheaper for those software vendors to deploy on a virtual machine than it is physical hardware. So chances are they'll want to push virtual machines in favor of regular hardware as well. So chapter 12 goes to into managing additional devices in our virtual machine. So again, when we think about a physical computer has components. So we've talked about some of those components and how they map into the virtual environment. So we've talked about CPUs. So we have a PCPU, which is the physical CPU on the computer. We've talked about vCPUs, which is the virtual CPUs that map to those time slices of the physical CPUs. We've talked about memory. We've talked about the physical memory and how the physical memory maps into our virtual environment and how we can do that. But there's other components within the PC that we haven't talked about yet. anything anybody can think of. Graphics cards. Sound cards. Motherboards. Things of that nature. So we don't really need to worry about a motherboard because we're not going to do anything with the motherboard. But graphics cards play an important part in some software, right? So if we want to run the Unreal Engine, so we're part of the game design course. We want to virtualize our game design software, put it in our virtual environment. Well, that Unreal software requires a 3D graphics card. Typically, in a Blade Center, you're not going to have a 3D graphics card. Blade Centers are meant to run business applications. So when you try to virtualize it, you have to have the software and the hardware that supports that virtualization framework. The Blade Center that we have here doesn't support that 3D virtualization platform, so I can't virtualize that Unreal Game Center. I tried. It doesn't work. Ran into that stumbling block just recently. Yeah. Didn't even think about it. So, again, sound cards. How do you transmit sound in a virtual environment? So you can have a sound card installed in your Blade Center, but you're not going to play all the virtualized server's sound out through the sound card that's in your physical server, right? It doesn't make sense. You want the sound to actually come through on the client side, right? So we're going to map those sound drivers, we're going to map them as virtual drivers and map the sound through. Other things that we've talked about or touched on sort of in the past here, DVD drives, CD-ROM drives, things of that nature. So again, we can move or map the physical access to those physical drives that exist in our host. We could put a CD-ROM drive in the host and then map it to our virtual machine. Or we can go through the process of mounting those ISOs images as virtual CD-ROM drives to our machines. So that's important. In terms of USB drives, especially when you're dealing with the Type 2 hypervisors that you're running on your local machines, it may become important to map your USB drives from your physical host to your virtual machine. So there's got to be some method in place that will allow you to do that. Are you trying to access files on a drive? Are you trying to actually install a device that you want to map over? Maybe you have a wireless card and you want to map your wireless card over into your virtual machine. So you're passing the commands from the physical hardware to the host and from the host to the virtual machine. So all types of hypervisors allow that sort of interaction. Also, something that comes into play is the virtual machine tools. Again, we've talked about VMware tools. Again, VMware tools not required to be installed on your machine. They're an optional component. But again, they allow you to do greater things and have greater communication between the client, the host, and the hypervisor. So VMware tools are recommended to be installed in machines. Again, they're going to allow for that additional drivers. Again, VMware is a microkernelized design, so all of the device drivers are installed into the hypervisor. You don't install any specific device drivers in the guest operating system. Hyper-V, again, microkernelized, meaning that you can install device-specific drivers, and the guest operating systems can talk to the hardware directly. So within Hyper-V, if you want to have access to that graphics card that's in your host, you can install the graphics card drivers on a specific host and pass that information along. If you want to do it for a sound card, same deal. So again, we go back to VMware. VMware monolithic. Everything's installed within VMware. VMware has a method to install device drivers. It's a little more complicated than it is installing it into a guest operating system because you have to install it into the hypervisor. So you have to copy the files over, then you have to access them from the machine. Normally it involves turning on SSH and actually SSHing into the host. So there's multiple steps, but you can install additional drivers into the hypervisor. Again, the hypervisor is still going to control all the interaction between the hardware and the hypervisor. Again, we've talked about 3D ROM drives. Again, you can map it to physical drives. You can map it to the physical drive that exists on the client that you're using to connect to the virtual machine, or you can map it to the physical device that exists within your host. Again, where do you want to put the CD? If you're remote and you're doing it from a different location where the server isn't, you're going to want to put that CD-ROM in your drive and then map your client drive to the virtual machine. So the client software facilitates that sort of communication. If you're actually at the server, maybe you want to dump the server. Maybe you have a copy of SQL and you know that you're going to install 50,000 instances of SQL throughout your virtual machines. So maybe you'll leave that desk in your host and you'll go and you'll point to that physical device anytime you need to install it. Again, probably not. Most people don't do that. Most people would make an ISO image of it and dump the ISO image to your virtual machine. But again, the hypervisor allows you to do that. And again, sometimes the software doesn't come in ISO form. If it doesn't come in ISO form, what are you going to do? You're going to take the CD-ROM drive and you're going to put it in your computer, then you're going to rip an ISO and then upload the ISO to the machine. Or you're going to just stick it in a piece of hardware, right? What's easier? Just putting it in the drive, right? Again, they're trying to facilitate many different ways to do the same thing. Floppy disks. Again, floppy disks have kind of gone by the wayside, so newer hypervisors don't actually support floppy disks. VMware, again, trying to play that. Well, we'll support whatever you can throw at us. Supports floppy disk images. Again, older operating systems don't recognize drives over certain sizes, so you actually have to use floppy disk images to install software. Again, legacy. Nobody does this anymore, but you can. It even says here, other methods probably used. Sound cards. Again, typically when you install a server operating system, servers don't generally even come with sound cards anymore. When I bought my server, it didn't have a sound card in it. I used my server as a desktop, so I had to go buy a sound card and put it in it, but they don't come with them. Again, why? In a virtual environment, you're not going to play your virtual machine's sound on your local host. Instead, you're going to map that sound through the client device. In a VDI environment, same thing. Your zero clients or your thin clients are going to map the sound from the server to their device, and it's their device that's actually going to have the physical hardware to play that sound and interpret those communications. Again, if you're using web applications and things like that through a zero client, it's going to map all of those sounds from the host to the guest operating system, from the guest operating system to the client that's connected to it. And the client is going to have the physical hardware that's going to play the sounds. Again, USB devices. Again, USB is more and more popular, the standard. Now it's, USB 3? And they're coming out with a new version of USB that's a different type of connector that you can't put in upside down. They call it something else, right? USB-C? 3.1
and C is
completely
different. C is the one that you can't put in upside down. But 3 and 3.1 are still the standard USB.
Okay. So, again, they're not full standards yet, so different people are doing them differently. So you get this sub kind of standard where, oh, I'm going to do it this way, and so is everybody else, maybe. Your HD DVDs versus Blu-ray DVDs, who's going to win, who's going to get the real standard. So you take your chances when you buy devices like that. You've got to make sure all sides of the hardware support it, your client device that's connecting to it, and the device that you're inputting into the USB drive. But again, USB provides data transfer power to device. Again, you can look on your computer and your computer will tell you what type of USB slot that you have there. If it's got the little power symbol on it, it supports a higher throughput of power to it. If it's below, I think it's USB 3. Again, it will tell you if you look at it and you can make your decisions that way. Again, the hypervisor is going to redirect the USB traffic to the virtual machine that connects to the device. So you have to actually tell the guest operating system that you're inserting it into it. Again, different hypervisors treat it differently. Hypervisor type 1 and hypervisor type 2 are going to treat it differently. But again, you can make that one-to-one mapping. Now with that one-to-one mapping, again, I said earlier, you may not want to virtualize your NK server because you need to keep that USB dongle plugged into it. You can tie up one of the USB ports on your physical host in the manner of the one-to-one mapping and actually run your NK software as a virtual server. But again, do you want to tie up that USB port on your physical host? Do you want to leave that expensive software sitting in your virtual host somewhere? And what happens if somebody walks into your server room and pockets that device? Now you can't connect to your server. So again, do you want it there? Do you not want it there? Again, it will deallocate and allocate the USB device resources just like it would in a physical machine. So if you pop it in, it shows up, you take it out, it disappears, etc. Graphics displays. Again, you're not going to have a physical graphics card for every virtual machine that exists in there. You do have the option of specifying how much video RAM is allocated to it, and it's going to allocate from the actual RAM that you have on the system. So by default, it has a monitor set of 1 when you connect to it. You're only going to have 1 client, 1 window. You can go in and actually specify the number of monitors that you're going to allocate to it. When you change the number of monitors that are allocated to a display device, it also changes the amount of video RAM that it's going to take from the host in order to run. So you can run into issues if you go and you try to have like 16 monitors on each one of your virtual machines. So just be careful of that. Again, by default, it has the minimum graphics resolution for each of your guest operating systems, so something like 800 by 600. And you can go in and change that. When you change that, it affects the total number of video memory that's taken by your guest operating systems. You can also do some other features, again, 3D, etc., if it's supported by the hardware. But some hardware doesn't support it fully. Again, you have to be careful of what you're trying to run and virtualize and pass along. Again, the devices that we talked about here are just a subset of the total number of devices that it supports. Virtual machines will also support things like parallel ports. Who uses parallel ports anymore? I don't know. They still do exist. Maybe some hand scanners and some legacy line printers. I don't know if your municipality still uses the impress printers, but that's who I use them. So, COM port devices, things like that. Yeah. The stuff that nobody wants to make go away but needs to go away. Yeah. If they stop supporting it, we'd be better off because then we could just throw it away and buy new stuff, but they won't.
Every day, get out of the way.
Yeah. Again, USB has superseded a lot of those devices, so you don't usually find parallel ports on printers anymore. You find USB ports. Serial ports, again, replaced by USB ports. Cisco equipment is one. Again, Cisco equipment for the longest time supported serial connections with an RJ45 jack, so you plug it in like an Ethernet cable, but the other side is serial. Again, now the newer devices support micro USB or mini USB, so you plug a USB cable in instead, but you have to have the device drivers to make it work correctly. So again, hypervisors are trying to support as much as they can. Different hypervisors support different sets, so you really need to research your hypervisor and find out what it supports in order to meet your needs. For the most part, they all work the same. Again, VMware tends to do some more legacy support, but is that really needed in your environment? That's for you to really decide. And again, each one of these vendors has a life cycle model that they support, and they'll tell you how long they're going to support it for, and usually what version that it's going to be removed from support. So you need to look at that and make those decisions before you go out and purchase the software. Any questions on any of that? Okay, so that's it for Chapter 12.